who's gone in as backs coach? Has it been named yet?
Oh, it's big rumours. He says he doesn't know.
Go on, you named the forwards coach.
I broke it last week. Prendergast.
Do you think is this Prendergast?
Then, yeah.
100%.
Well, I just made it up there now, so if you want to take my word for it.
It's just come true. He's non-existent.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello, and you're very welcome back to the latest episode of House of Rugby. I'm in a hot seat today. As we said last week, Jason's off sunning himself in sunny Nerca in Spain. But we're lucky enough to have Lindsay Peat back. You're very welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you very much. I missed your little face. And this guy here, I had to go back to because he did such a good job. I was a bit territorial last week.
So. Yeah, of course. We got Mr. Mustache back, Darren Cave. Very welcome again.
Thank you. We're actually trialling a new format. House Rugby, we're all about giving the fans what they want. We've got so many messages looking rid of Jason. that we thought this would be a good opportunity to workshop a new format. So
yeah, no, everyone just wanted the mustache back, man.
I can't blame them.
That was it. You look great. And we have an incredible guest on today, Munster. What, 157 caps for Munster and Irish international Rory Scanlon. Very welcome, Rory.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here.
Good to have you on. And you actually played in the match on Friday night. We might as well just jump straight into it. The best match of the weekend, Munster versus Cardiff in Musgrave Park. No longer Irish Independent Park, but Musgrave. You must be delighted with that as well because you're a Cork man. But how did you feel the match went?
Yeah, it was a good win. Good crowd down there. It was a tough game. I hadn't played in a few weeks, so a lot of running involved. Cardiff are a good attacking team as well, so it was a good challenge, but we got 5 points, which was great, so it was a good night.
Yeah, it was great. A lot of lads after the game, I think Peter O'Mahony said it, and Mike Haley, man of the match, said they were wrecked after the game. Is that from the 4G, or was that just training load was heavy during the week?
Tended to be a bit more running game, I think. Cardiff run the ball a lot as well, we knew that, but yeah, I was thinking halfway through, was it just me and not having played in a few weeks, feeling a bit unfit, or was everyone else feeling the same? And I think the general consensus was that it was a tough game, a lot of running involved. So yeah, the lads were quite tired after.
Yeah, well, it was a 42-21, so there was a lot of tries scored. And you had a big moment where you gave it over the top to Jack O'Donoghue, who moved it on to Mike Haley, was it? That was a nice pass over you,
first try, yeah.
So, it was a hell of a peanut off the left. It just sort of shaped, and then I think we're going to see it later. Sorry to spoil the show.
It was incredible. Yeah, was it skip three over the top?
Skip it. It was a Wembley ball over the top.
To the quick lads.
But
you had a small margin to get it to Jack, and he caught it well, and it was nice.
Good finish.
Well, how come? I'm going to just go straight out to say you kind of started a bit slowly, didn't you? Cardiff got two early tries. What do you think happened there?
I think they just got a bit of momentum, and we struggled a bit defensively at the start. They got a quick try, and then, you know, when they get that momentum, we got a bit narrow defensively, and you know, we had a chat about it under the posts, and I think we kind of solved that after the first kind of 20 minutes and managed to keep them out for most of the game. But yeah, we started a bit slow and took us a while to get into it, but yeah, I think we did quite a good job in the end.
Yeah, you did a great show. I was very impressed with do you know who's after winning me over? Is Mike Haley's after winning me over. I thought he had an incredible game.
Was it just last night that you've decided?
No, I always knew he was.
He's an Irish international.
He hasn't been capped yet. He's been in the squad. Is there been
caps? He's capped, yeah.
How many caps do you have?
I think he's one, yeah.
Did you get one?
Fact check.
Well, I was asking you before how many caps you have.
Too many to remember.
Yeah. Well, I've no Irish caps, so I can't say. Oh, no, it's Irish 15s caps. But no, Mike Haley, I always knew he was a good player, but he was phenomenal on the weekend. Dude, he was everywhere. Is he always like that in training? Or?
Yeah, he's a great engine. In fairness, unbelievably fit. You know, he hasn't really been in the mix with Ireland, but obviously fullback's a strong position in the country. And he's been outstanding, particularly the last 2 years. He's backing it up week on week, which is great.
That's what I was going to say. He's so consistent.
Yeah, he's playing every week. And in fairness to him, he fronts up every week. So he's been doing a great job for us, in fairness. Yeah.
But when he and his try, all the defenders, they saw you coming.
Like, yeah, they all bit in on me, I'd say. Yeah,
and you were screaming. It was one of those ones where he stumbled through and you were like, fall over and pop it up, fall over and pop it up.
Yeah.
He wasn't giving it to me too quickly, unfortunately.
Well, if the rugby nerdness now is going to come out, like that pass is what made the try, but you won't get any of the credit for it. Like, but see that.
It's all parts, but I'm happy enough. As long as we're scoring and winning games.
But this is actually what I want to know. Did you ever train with Greg?
Yeah, plenty.
Tell us about Greg, the rugby player. I know him as Greg the Influencer, right?
Could he hit that pass that you hit for Mike Kevin?
There's no way he's a good passer.
He was usually on the end of them, to be fair. So we
finisher?
Yeah, a bit of a finisher, very quick.
So he took all the accolades.
He used to take all those passes over the top.
Me and Skans played a lot of A rugby together when I first went to the academy in 2013. And we did a year in academy together, and then he pushed on to the senior squad and became the player he is now. But I played in the wing a lot of A caps. I never got a Munster senior cap, but I got a lot of A caps with him. Yeah, we won a BNI Cup together. Did you play in that one?
Or
you
didn't? No, big time. Didn't play then. Yeah, big time, but I wasn't here, unfortunately.
I'll tell you another guy who made a big impact for me, and we're going to probably fall out, right? So you're going to help us with this argument. Craig Casey obviously came on and made a big impact. He really sped things up for us, and really made. He obviously got 2 tries then himself. Talk to me about Craig Casey. Do you think he should be starting? Because for me, he's a favourite of mine, because I think the game has evolved, and any time I've seen Munster put a consistent performance together, he's been at the heart of it, to be honest. He moves the ball quick, he gets your forwards on the ball, he's playing open play, he's played that new offloading game with a mixture of your youth and experience, and I think any of your standout performances, for me personally, this man to my right will argue with me, I think Craig Casey. Now, it's nothing against Conor Murray. He's been a stalwart of both Munster and Ireland. But for me now, for going forward at the business end, I'd probably favour
I Mr. love it. CC. I thought the Scans first, yeah.
Greg's a big Murray fan, I know that. So,
which one of your teammates do you like better?
It's not to make it personal.
You have to pick one, Scans.
Yeah, I have to pick one. Like,
I told you he'd be political, you wouldn't
he
be.
He has to be, like, you know, imagine rocking up the training tomorrow, and he's like, you know what I mean?
Well, not making that a personal thing, if you're going to say for the business end, if Munster are going to bring home trophies, who's the man who's playing the rugby that's going to get you over the line? So it's not about, like, because obviously they're both gentlemen, they're both fabulous players and people, but yeah. Like, Munster want to see trophies, he's been barren for a long time. I love massaging that in as a Leinster woman, but that's my question to you.
It's
now.
A good weekend, actually.
Yeah, I think, like,
oh, sorry, we bought our little crash load of players down to South Africa.
Yeah. No, I think the last few weeks, like, Connor has been playing very well when he started. And like, Craig's been bringing a great impact off the bench that we saw the other night. And like, when Craig has started as well, he's had some great performances, as you said. So I think the way we've been going the last few weeks seems to be working well. That last 20 minutes when games open up, Craig's coming on having a huge impact, and 2 tries the other night. He's running around, lads, for fun. You know, they're 2 very different players, as you said. Connor's kicking game, like, best in the world, I think. So I think the way we've been going the last few weeks, I think it's been working. So I wouldn't see it changing, but I'm not picking the team, unfortunately. So.
Casey it is.
Are you Casey over Murray?
I'm Switzerland. Like, I ain't getting involved in this.
Pick
like,
one, man. You're the most opinionated man
pick
ever.
Pick one or
pick
piss
one.
Off.
Go. Murray or Casey?
I think starting you need you know, you need depth in all positions.
Get away with
you're
all that crap.
Need
pick
the
one.
Other one to come off the bench. I am picking one.
You're such a sausage, man. Pick one.
A sausage.
No, I'm not picking one.
Oh,
listen,
man.
They're both good. Listen, do you have to have an opinion? Can I not be?
Of course you do.
Can
it's your
I
whole job.
Say, listen, they're both good players. I don't know what's the style of play.
Oh,
you know,
don't
I
give
think,
me that crap, man.
It's the truth. It's
listen,
the truth.
I'm a loose head who likes the loose game, and I like running off little mad number nines who I excite me and are quick. So, you know, it's not a Conor Murray thing. You know, then there's the more
but
rounded.
What about, I want to ask you about the Munster style of play, right? And Larkham coming in there, like I've said on the show before, I was buzzing. He was part of that Brumbies team, and I grew up going to Sky. For a long time, Munster's attack, I think when you watch it, it doesn't look that effective. But when you look, and I noticed this last week, the amount of tries scored, do you feel any of that from outside the group? Like, you know, getting flack about the style of play? And obviously the main measure of an attack is how many tries you score. And Munster score an absurd amount of tries.
Yeah, we like there would be noise in the background about our style of play. I think the attack the last couple of months, last 18 months has been, you know, we've showed some great stuff at times. You know, a lot of it as well, you know, yourself playing Ireland, it's weather dependent. So a rainy night in Thomond Park might not be the best night to throw the ball around. But I think, as you said, like we're scoring tries, which is the main thing. You know, when we're getting into the 22, you know, our line-out's been very good. Our maul's been very good. So, you know, as long as we're scoring tries, we're just going to kind of ignore that noise on the outside. And I think there's been some great glimpses of our attack, you know, even saw Friday night. So I think it's definitely gotten a lot better over the last 2-3 years since since Steve's come in.
Because I noticed, obviously, being an Ulster fan, watching Ulster every week, there's always so much about like Ulster's attack, mm-hmm. and they play this brilliant brand of rugby, and it's brilliant, and Balakoon and Michael Ari, it's just unbelievable. And then the game last week, before the game, I checked. I don't think I said this on the show last week. And
15 more tries, Munster.
Munster scored 15 more tries than Ulster that far to that point.
More again, I said 16 or 17.
Yeah, and I just thought that that's they're averaging one a game more, and isn't it strange how my perception as like showbiz pundit.
I think it comes from
was that Munster's attack has really been unimpressive under Larkham and hasn't moved forward.
Yeah,
I
think it stems from people in Ulster being not so excited about Balakoon and Lowry, who are open, evasive runners, where Munster have a lot of like seasoned fellas who know how to play the game. They just get it done. You're much more efficient down in Munster, I think. It's not the most exciting.
It is
sometimes it's exciting, but it's so efficient. Like, get into 22 to score, get back. They're winning games. That's why they're second in the league now, which is... But I just want to go back to this Murray Casey thing, right? Very quickly.
Yeah.
I just feel that Murray's getting left. Being like, everyone's like, oh, drop Murray, he's finished. But I don't think he's finished at all. His kicking ability is incredible. And I think the best situation to have is what Rory said there, is start him and get the game up and running. He's going to do his job. And then bring Casey on, who's just a firecracker. Come on.
I think the opposite, right? Because I think you're going into Toulouse next week. I think you need like Casey, who's fiery, and get that game like won. Like, and then Murray to close it out as the consistent, well-seasoned, experienced number nine who can close the game out and slow it down when you need to. That's my opinion.
Really? But you don't think Casey coming on against tired Toulouse forwards?
I don't see I don't see them being that same animal personally, but
you know?
No, and I think, you know,
I love Casey as well. He's a Shannon man. He's a Limerick man.
No, please let me wrong, because I don't want Conor Murray rocking up in his Land Rover to my house like saying, Lindsay, what's the story here? What's your problem with me?
Apparently,
I think he's a fantastic number nine. No,
apparently he's a huge listener of this show.
Who?
He absolutely is. Murray. Of course.
That's why I'm a wee bit reluctant to say, like...
Yeah.
Conor Murray, if you're listening, I still think you've so much to give and I love you. But...
And you're gorgeous.
He is gorgeous.
I'm not going that far, okay? You can get away with it with the tash.
But Murray versus DuPont, sure, what do you think about that? Do you think Casey would be better up going against DuPont? They're kind of similar players.
Yeah, I see your point, because obviously now you're kind of pitching two like scrum halves that are going to outwit one another.
Yeah, they both play the same.
They're just going to, they're the masterminds pulling the string of the overall team. So DuPont, he just takes those chances, and this is where we're at the business end of the season. So I think Murray, for me at times, and as I said, it's just a personal thing for me if I was playing. And anyone who played would be like, yeah, Lindsay's not safe. She's the most reckless player. And I was a point guard at basketball, so like my coach hated me. But I just think business end of the season, sometimes you need that little bit of magic. But yeah. I think the good conundrum is that you have two fantastic number nines. And then now with Haley, with Healy, with Joey, like everyone's, and if you can keep them fit, like I think it's hopefully going to be a successful end of the season for,
That's what he said 10 minutes ago. He was like, we need them both.
Well,
what
we needed to fill some airtime.
Yeah, true.
At least by
Conor Murray's going to start against Toulouse, by the way.
Obviously he is. against Toulouse, what do you think? You're going to get it done in the Aviva?
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be tough. Obviously, we played them last year, so it's that was an incredibly physical game and massive pack. You know, we know what they're going to bring, and some lethal backs as well. So it's going to be tough, but hopefully we get a big crowd into the Aviva and give it a rattle.
Well, just there about the Aviva, what's it internally in the Munster team? Are you kind of annoyed it's not in Thomond, because that's a fortress for you guys.
Yeah, like obviously we love playing in Thomond, but it was, you know, we kind of knew a while back that if we got to this point and it was, you know, if it was two of us in this game, that it was going to be in Dublin. And, you know, it was a decision made a long time ago. So
you knew that age.
Yeah, internally we knew, like, so it's, you know, it's not a surprise to us.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there's been loads of buses and trains organized as well. And I think they've sold over 30,000 tickets already. So hopefully we get more of a crowd up there. It'd be great. You know, that game we played against Sarries a few years ago in the semi-final, you know, packed full of red jerseys. It was incredible buzz up there. So, you know, hopefully we get that again. It was, you know, but win this time, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. Munster are one of the best supported rugby teams in the world. So I think everyone is going to travel, but it's just the difference. Thomond is just like, I'd hate to be Toulouse coming to Thomond. I think they'd be a little bit happier going to Aviva, it's more modern stadium. What would you make of that, Darren?
I think you're probably right. But again, like from the Munster point of view, I remember like when we were playing Ulster, playing in a Champions Cup semi-final, and it was at the Aviva. And I do think one thing Munster and Ulster both have, and Connacht, all the provinces, is like a lot of people that will get in behind him. And I do think for the players, like it is a little bit different and it's also special. Yeah. And thinking back to that game, I remember there was probably 40 something thousand fans from Belfast, and it turned into, like, you know, the whole kind of city or area, and the whole of Limerick will be in Dublin, and it turns into like a big thing, and then that's really different and that's really special, you know, going to the Aviva and seeing, not that when you're playing for Ireland it's not special, but just really different. And I do think Munster is the kind of club. Did I not hear during the week Munster, Martin Anniai, the CEO of the URC, said Munster are the most, there were some stats came out about like viewership.
Most watched.
Munster are the most watched team.
Yeah, the YouTube clips even, their most watched are Munster. Like, so it's just avid fans. Do you know what I mean?
So I think the fans will get in behind them.
Yeah. Well, it's over 2 years now with COVID and everything. Everything's been so interrupted. I think the Munster crew, and like I hope to be there maybe with my son, you know, and there's so many even girls I play with club who are based up here in Munster. So I think it's going to be, hopefully people will get up and support. And
yeah, like even the last few games over in Exeter, you know, fans are just delighted to be allowed to go to games there again. So, and Munster love travelling, so it's, you know, we've had a great crowd the last few weeks, and, you know, as you said, a lot of, like, Limerick, Cork people, they're all based in Dublin as well, so I'm sure we'll see a lot of that contingent as well. So
yeah, definitely.
Sure, the Munster fans there always look a wee bit like happy, the away games always look a bit like that, like they're just happy to be out of the house. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they look like they're always on lockdown, and then they've rocked up at Sandy Park. This is still locked in Limerick. That guy hasn't been outside for months.
Munster fans travel everywhere. Like,
they love it. Like, they love it.
You see what Jake Paul said last night about Irish fans? So obviously Katie Taylor won last night, which is incredible.
You.
Best Irish athlete ever, in my opinion. She's incredible. 100%. Jake Paul got interviewed afterwards, who was the promoter of the Serrano.
Yeah.
And he was like, Irish fans are crazy. He was like, you couldn't get over Irish fans. Like, so even Munster, more rural, even, like, do you know what I mean? So I think hopefully we get something like that in the Aviva on Saturday and get the win. I believe Munster can win, but what do you guys think?
Rory, I actually think so. No, I think it's been a good year. I think, consistent performance throughout. I think it could be a nice red day.
I don't think Toulouse are all that this year. I think Munster are going to win. Yep. Just from watching them against Ulster both weeks. I know they beat Ulster, but like Ulster will be sweating because like it wasn't just like sometimes you rock up against one of the best teams in the world and you get spanked. Like, they were there to be beaten.
They just made
an absolute bollocks of it. So like I think Toulouse are, they're not sitting as pretty in the league. I think they're 100% there to be beaten. And Munster, I think Munster can definitely do it.
I love that, Derek.
I think this question.
I absolutely love Munster, except when they went in Belfast.
Do you know what would have been
still
nice?
Still not over that.
Yeah.
It would have been nice having Ulster Munster, though, on a Aviva. That would have been class. Yeah, but look,
it would have been good.
Hindsight's great.
Maybe next year.
Yeah. What about the other province there?
Table top of Leinster, obviously, we're still down in South Africa, and we're hoping to bounce back against the Stormers, but unfortunately, it was not to be. And they came around with a bonus point loss, so they secured their place at the top and a home quarterfinal. So not too bad. They went out with a very experimental squad.
Yeah, that's a good word for experimental. They lost 20 points to 13, and they kicked it out, as you said there at the end, which was such a weird thing to see.
Harry Byrne kicked it out, and I could see Alex Soraka like kind of turning, and Reese Ruddock was trying to calm him down. And I was like,
"Yeah, some left mag, I think, wasn't there?"
And I was like, "I totally am with you, Alex. I don't know, I don't know why he's done it, but obviously this is something tactically they spoke about. Maybe after they were happy enough, but
did they need a bonus point? No, they didn't. They're so far up the top of the table, like."
No, like, maybe it was to do with other teams, I think
they're six clear of us now, and we play them last. So if they didn't get the bonus point, we might have potentially beat them points difference.
There you go. So it's important for
them to get that point. I think,
sitting watching that game would have rather that they played on in the hope that something went wrong and someone went the length and they didn't get the bonus point, and you beat them and you can finish top.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There we go.
Munster not happy that the ball was kicked out.
I'll give you the Toulouse win, but just to come up there as confident saying when we beat them at the end of the season.
When we beat them with a bonus point in Dublin, as you
getting a bit too confident here.
And you think the Leinster lads were standing on the pitch there in South Africa going, hold on, we worked this out now. If we kick this out, we get a bonus point. And
then Reese Ruddock was like kind of really like trying to explain, as to why, because...
Would you get into that depth, Rory, on the pitch?
There'd be messages coming on, like from coaches, depending on other results or whatever it is. So
that was always the magic of Champions Cup round six.
Yeah. The delay kickoff, you kind of knew what you needed to do or how many points or tries you had to score. So it's important to have that information. I suppose maybe only the captain and the out half might have got that message That's why Harry probably kicked the ball out at the end. So,
That would have come down from Leo Cullen and get the ball off the pitch.
I reckon the couple of the decision makers probably are the more experienced guys, probably would have had it in the back of their heads. The young guys are just chomping on the bit. The first caps, they want to go. They know they're not getting picked next week in the big game, so they're going, I want to do everything I can. I want to fight. I want to keep going.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think makes Leinster so deadly, is they bring their bench on. And actually, it's happened at Ireland a bit. When the bench comes on, they're all absolutely dying to get a start next week. Like, this is the first time. This is their only chance.
Yeah.
So they don't come on and go, oh, we've got our bonus point, we'll chill out. They come on and they like pump you, and the tries keep coming.
Yeah.
And it did feel like the young guys were like that. I personally thought it was like you're Leinster, you've gone to South Africa, it's not easy to do. The Stormers at the minute are
third.
They're right there. And you've nearly beaten them with, that's not even the second team. That's genuinely, not to be disrespectful, I saw that team last night and I'd say there was at least five players I'd never heard of.
I didn't know
before.
Them either.
But you're Alex Soroka. I've seen him like about maybe two, three weeks ago playing for Clontarf in the AAL. So,
amazing.
Like, these were guys. Yeah, he's fantastic. And he's only obviously an Irish under 20 this year. So he's had a great campaign. So he's a good guy to watch. Yeah. And obviously, he's a fantastic guy. His family are Ukrainian originally. And he's, I think, raised 50,000 plus with a.
For Children's Hospital
for
in
Children's
Ukraine.
Hospital, yeah. So a big shout out to Alex. Great work. And obviously our hearts go out to all the Ukrainian families affected with this, you know, what's going on in the world, which is obviously heartbreaking. So fair play to him. And if anyone can help out, obviously, and has a bit of spare change, donate. But so he's a good young guy who went down and would take opportunity. So I'm sure he was like, don't kick the ball out. I want another chance.
He doesn't know when the next time he's getting a game. Absolutely. He's way back playing for Clontarf. And I thought, if you're Leo, you go down there, whole group of new players, like your first team are at home, like doing lovely training, conditioning, training really hard, long weekends, just getting ready for this these Champions Cup game, and you've gone down and you've secured top spot. They didn't need to win. Yes, winning's a habit and it's great, but all you need to do in that top eight is be in it and then make sure you're as high up as possible, because obviously your seating gets carried. So now Leinster will not play a knockout game outside of Dublin, so they're either going to play the whole way through in Dublin. That's brilliant.
Class.
Like, kick the ball out and go home.
And to get some of your like more seasoned players that bit of rest, and some players coming back, like Frawley was back from injury, to get him some confidence in game time is huge. So, I mean, what Stuart Lancaster and Leo are doing there and just moving the pieces around is a luxury. Whereas, you know, obviously we'll talk later in the show about Connacht and, you know, players moving, but, you know, not every squad has that luxury of the depth and being able to do that.
Actually, interesting question for you. Now, like, since the competitions have changed over the past few years, I think I'm right in saying there's 8 knockout games if you're going to win both competitions. So like, that is absurd. Yeah. Like, it's not long ago that, you know, you had 3 in Europe and then the league was whoever finished top. It's a lot of rugby. And actually, after Ulster went out, I thought this is a real positive for Ulster, one competition. So, like, what's it like at Munster now, knowing that, like, every week, like, if you guys keep winning every week for the rest of the season, you're on it. Like, it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, it's tough run into the season if you end up in both competitions. You know, and even like the last league games are usually inter-pro derbies, which are obviously incredibly tough as well. So, you know, if you want to be winning trophies, it's an incredible ask. And you need that squad depth as well, because, you know, unfortunately there will be injuries and stuff. But, you know, they're all really tough games, those games. So it's, you know, it's, as you said, if it's 8 knockout games you have to win, it's a tough ask. But, you know, lads enjoy that as well. You know, it's a great time of the season. If you're in knockout games, lads are buzzing and stuff. So it's, you know, it's an exciting time.
Yeah. And does mindset change now going into this European Cup week, or is it the same just process? Just 80 minutes of rugby in the weekend?
Yeah, just park the URC for 2 weeks and then, you know, just concentrate on Toulouse. And, you know, I think we just stick with what we've been doing the last couple of weeks. I don't think much will change. And, you know, hopefully we'll...
like, the vibe won't change. You won't be kind of nervous around the
camp. No, like that. I would have found that before, that, you know, on European Cup weeks, there was just kind of a bit of an intensity there when you come in the door on a Monday. But, like, the vibe inside now is a lot, you know, calmer and stuff. It's real enjoyable in there, and, you know, it's not too intense. So it's, you know, lads are looking forward to coming in for this week now, and it's, you know, it'll be a great buzz around the place.
Yeah, because everyone's kind of speculating the last couple of weeks with all the chopping and change with the coaches, and Rowntree finally getting named as the head coach for next season. Leamy's coming in, which, congratulations, you said that would happen, and you were right.
I'm Munster man. I'm Munster man. Well, I know what the Munster people want.
that was some shout out of you.
And I said, do you know what Munster need? They've got Rowntree. He, you know, he clearly gets Munster. I said this, he gets it. He's from a rugby town. I know Munster's not a town. I know enough about my geography of Ireland.
but
I just feel like Leicester and Munster are two clubs that, like, you saw at the weekend, or if anyone didn't see, you should look it up. It's a great clip of Tom Youngs leading out the team. He's retiring. Great story, Leicester legend. And we were chatting about Irish team playing at Wilford Road last week. It's a great club. And I think there's a lot of similarities between it and Munster. But I just felt like the current coaching ticket have done a great job, but I just feel like Munster's a place where there is such an advantage to the DNA of the club and the culture and the people and the way they play and the way they behave that I just thought it would be a big mistake for Rowntree to go and pick. Do you know what I mean? Like, go.
Coaching staff's too exotic at the moment, in my opinion.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that every now and again, but I just exotic's a great word. Yeah, like,
it's like Munster fellas and Munster blood who understand, like, you're coming from PBC, he understands, he came through the school system, 20s, all the way up. Like, Leamy's going to know exactly what he's about. He can relay that back to Rowntree. But what I was going to say is, you said the guys are really enjoying it at the moment inside Munster in UL. But people are speculating the last couple of weeks, like, oh, chopping and changing the coaches, they must be really all over the place, Munster inside. But what is the vibe like inside the last couple of weeks? Have you brought closer together by all this outside external speculation, or how has it been?
Yeah, to be honest, it's probably the first time that I've been in the club where, like, coaches have changed and you haven't really heard any whispers or names around the place. You know, we knew Johan was leaving the end of the season, but nothing's really changed from our side of things. And at least we've a bit of clarity now that Graham's coming in next year as head coach. But yeah, it's like there hasn't been much of a, you know, change inside from our point of view, where lads talking about who's going to be coming in or whatnot. So just concentrating on this season, I suppose, really, and what happens.
And one thing, I was unfortunate when I was playing that at Ulster, it felt like every 3 years there was a flipping overhaul of coaches and coaches and coaches. And one thing, I'll be interested to get your take on this again. I don't think on the outside you realise how big it is, like, a change of coaches in terms of how fickle it is. I think if you're a Joe Bluggs and you drink pints and go to the games, you think, oh, she is a better player than her, or he is better than him. But it's, in the end of the day, it's somebody has a style of play. Certain coaches have certain traits, do you know what I mean? So for actually the likes of yourself, who's probably not playing as much rugby this year as you have in the past, you'd like to. Like, I remember being in that position, and if you're currently holding the jersey and there's a new coach, it's a bad thing. But if you're not playing as much, it's brilliant. It's a new opportunity.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like, different coaches, different style of play. They might prefer a different type of, you know, 9 or 10, a kicking 10 or a running 10. You know, that varies from coach to coach. And I think when Johan came in from Razzie, the style of play was pretty similar. So not much a change for us, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, next year if whoever comes in, if there is a different style of play, or, you know, it might suit other players better than some others. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I probably should have done a little bit more research before coming on, but who's going in as backs coach? Has it been named yet?
Oh, it's big rumours. He says he doesn't know.
Go on, you named the forwards coach.
I broke it last week, Prendergast.
Do you think is this Prendergast?
Then, yeah.
100%.
Well, I just made it up there now, so if you want to take my word for it.
It's just come true. He's non-existent.
Hold on, let me just check.
Well, you got Leamy right. It came out like 2 days after you said it.
Just
so friend of guys.
Throw a few names around. Do you know what I mean? Every now and again, you get it right.
He has this stirring pot there. Let me see. Just add a bit more ingredients.
And do you like the idea of having Irish guys in there?
Hey, I think you need a balance. You know, like you said there, Graham, like Leicester, it was very similar culture and stuff to what Munster was when he came. So, you know, he's from a big rugby club. He understands it. And, you know, sometimes you need someone like that from another club. Other times, you know, having local guys might work. You know, when I came through, it was obviously, when you were there as well, it was all Munster lads that were coaching. Yeah. And sometimes you need, you know, a different set of eyes that seen something different from outside of that club to come in as well. So I think you need a bit of a balance, right, for sure.
Yeah. I think Munster's going in the right way anyway.
We do with the Dublin ladies. I know they've tried to bring in ex-players back in, as like psychology, and Cliona O'Connor would have been ex-goalkeeper. We played together, so she's now the S&C. So it's true, and we discussed this about the younger fellas coming back in with really bringing that Munster culture. You can't buy that. You can't create all of a sudden this, but if you're raised on Munster rugby, you know exactly. And I know Leinster tend to do it a bit, is try to get Leinster boys back in, because half your job is done then, because they know exactly what, you know, exactly, the culture is and the ethos and what's expected. So it'd be nice for a bit of continuity and to see Leamy back, who's been part of it. successful team.
And it's great to see Johan leaving on a positive note as well. Minimum quarterfinal in both competitions, like, so Munster in a great place after all the chat along the season.
Couple of new signings as well, please.
Couple of new signings as well. But will we move on to more stuff about Rory Scannell and we'll get back
into it? Yes, we will. Let's move on to really, the
old Leinster fans will be happy. They didn't get much of a look in, did they? There, we went from like, did they kick the ball? Did not? Who cares?
Yeah, but
like,
honest,
haven't heard of half the team. Okay, Leinster have unearthed another 10 brilliant players.
Let's
get on with it.
We're where we need to be.
Yeah, we don't need to talk. Leinster lost, so they don't want us to talk about it, I presume. Reece Ruddock had a great game. Alex Soroka was the biggest talking point.
Reece Ruddock went on a line break.
Yeah.
Saw that.
I tell you what, he had a bit of pace about him. I was like, cool, Reece. Yeah.
He was going uphill, definitely, from where I was.
And no one off his shoulder. They were like, oh, we'll catch him now.
I was known for my pace, you know, so.
Yeah, now I'll leave Leinster there. That's enough about them. We'll talk about them next week. So let's go on to Rory Scannell and we'll leave the analysis away for a minute. Do you mind if we ask you a few questions?
Yeah, sure.
I'll fire off at the first one. So I believe you have 157 caps for Munster now, and if I did my research right, you're the first or the youngest player to reach 100 caps in the province, which is really cool. I remember coming in the academy, man, you were straight into the senior squad, you were playing every single week. Remember you played in that Axel game as well against Glasgow, so geez, you've been at it a while, man.
Yeah, pushing on now, yeah.
You're pushing on now, yeah. But mentioning all that, what has been your highlight in the Munster jersey to date? It could have been that Axel game you played in because you started at 12, but something else maybe?
Yeah, that was a special occasion, for sure. The Toulon quarterfinal, I think, as well. You know, world-class Toulon side, and, you know, we had a lot of our key players out injured, and, you know, getting a win against a side of that, our quality side like that, was incredible. So that was definitely a good memory.
Yeah. So you have a lot of memories in that jersey, to be fair.
You play with your brother?
Yep.
Niall, so how competitive is it? And I know you have a cousin, Jack O'Sullivan, and your younger brother plays in France. He's signed with Biarritz, but he's on loan, is he out?
Yeah, he's on loan this year, yeah.
So is it really competitive, or the fact that he's played different positions? I know Niall's front row and you're in the back.
Yeah, we'd be quite competitive, right, in everything. But yeah, it probably helps that we're not in the same position, for sure.
I was going to say, I haven't seen him kick a ball.
I don't know.
He backs himself, does he?
Probably would, row. Yeah.
Played a bit of football in his day, so I'd say he would back himself. But yeah, hopefully we don't see him kick a ball this season now.
And do you think the younger fella Billy's going to come back, or what's the plan?
He's unsure yet. He's really enjoyed France. You know, it's probably a good experience for him as well, moving over so young. But yeah, he's not sure what he's doing yet for next season. But he's really enjoyed it over there. So it's we'll see what happens.
What position is Billy?
He's a hooker as well, but there's good age gap there, so they're not competing too much.
Oh, and competitive between them?
Yeah, they would be. Niall would probably
would offer
be
him
most.
A bit of.
Yeah, he'd help me out quite a lot. He was home now, right, last week, so doing a bit of throwing and whatever.
So technical.
Whatever they do.
I want to ask about maybe a tough question to answer, but I'll throw it out there anyway. I remember from now, again, just thinking back on Niall's playing, and when Ulster, there was chat of them signing someone, or obviously for me, I remember when they signed Jarrod Payne. How have you found it, like, being such a big part of, like, a really good Munster team? And then, obviously, you see someone the likes of Dale Andy come in, and, you know, for Munster, it's hard to blame them when you get a player at that level. But, like, again, so it's from my opinion, like, I was quite surprised that they went to the market again to replace him with another sort of... And, you know, you're probably past the stage as a player where, well, it might be the party line and you might say it, and no harm did for sort of saying, oh, it's great to rub shoulders with these guys. Well, it must be frustrating as well.
Yeah, well, obviously, as you want to play every week pretty much. And, you know, I haven't played as much as I had in previous seasons. But, you know, I'm every time I get a chance, I want to show what I'm about, for sure. But, you know, you need quality players to win these trophies now as well. And, like, Damien's been class for us since he came in. And, you know, you've Chrissy there as well, who's been unbelievable for us for the last number of years since he came. So it's, and there's guys then, you know, Dan Goggin, Liam Coombs, these guys behind, you know, that are chomping at the bit as well. So it's, you know, it's good competitiveness in the squad, and, you know, everyone wants to be playing every week, and, you know, I'm the same. So, yeah, it's been, you know, not playing as much as was probably a change for me, and, you know, something at the time you probably took for granted. But, you know, now it gives you a bit more competitiveness, I suppose, when you get a chance.
Yeah, well, I kind of say it every week. I just don't see why they're going to sign in these Feketos and the guy coming in from Bristol as well. Some French guy, I can't remember his name. Excuse my ignorance.
Excuse the professionals.
Yeah, but I just think there's no need. Like, you know, you're sitting there with over 150 caps, as you said, Dan Gogg and all the rest are there. Why not play these Irish guys, like, you know, and get them back into an Irish jersey? Because I presume your goal is to still play for Ireland and before you go away and make a bag of money over France.
Yeah, you know, like, you know yourself, Kevy, like, it's the centre is an incredibly competitive position in the country at the moment. You know, there was when I was in the Irish squad, you know, I felt at times I was in good form, but you know, you're just looking at the guys there, you're like, I just can't get in. And sometimes you kind of have to look and just take that on the chin. You're going to give it everything, but you know, sometimes it's about timing as well. And you know, unfortunately, there's five or six really, really good centres in the country at the same time that I've been here. So it's, you know, it's obviously tough to get in there, but. That's the aim, I suppose, to keep pushing.
It's actually wild at the minute. Well, Ireland, it's the same in all positions, but if you look, think of the centres,
right.
Like, it's just like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I like the way you said it, like, it wasn't as competitive as that when I was there.
Yeah.
There was a couple of good lads playing for O'Driscoll. He was top right. And then he had another wee mate.
I don't think he really made much of it.
I didn't rate him, right? But yeah. Declan Kinney loved him. Listen, we'll save it for another episode.
Yeah, no, of course. But that's still the goal for now, is get back into the Irish jersey.
Keep pushing, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't follow sure. Billy over to Brits just yet.
No, not yet, no.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. No, I love to hear it. And you play 10 a good bit as well. You play 10 a lot when you first broke into the senior team. Do you still train at 10 or is that you're just centre now?
Like, you know, over the last couple of seasons, you know, Joe had a few injuries and, you know, when Tyler was there, we were probably short with a 10. And, you know, we've kind of gone with that 6-2 split in the bench a few times where I've been covering that. I haven't played there in a while now, but I would train there a bit. You know, if you wear a 10 there, I'm happy to step in there as well. So it's, you know, a position that I grew up playing until I kind of came into the academy, really. Yeah. So, I really enjoy playing 10.
Yeah, well, I say the lads love having you at 12 because you can jump into that 10 role and sort it out from, because, like, obviously Ben Healy's only up and coming, you have Jack Crowley up and coming. So to have so much of your experience on the outside is great. And I thought you and Chris did very well on the weekend. So who knows, selection for next week, like, who's going to be in the centre?
Playmakers, yeah.
Absolutely. We'll see.
For any of our listeners who don't know, your family is steeped in history and your grandfather would have captained Cork to an All-Ireland back in the 1950s. Probably the last time Cork won a football All-Ireland, but we'll move on quickly. No, what are you talking
about? Cork.
No, was it ever a dream of yours playing growing up to play for Cork? Or did you play football?
Yeah, I played a lot of the hurling football with Douglas. You know, and you kind of get, I played soccer, rugby as well, obviously, but when you get to that age, I think it was about 16, 17, and you know, you start getting selected for Munster underage sides. I kind of had to make a decision then, you know, to stick with the rugby, and you know, I really enjoyed playing hurling football as well. But yeah, I went down the rugby route, and I don't know if the grandfather would be too impressed. But
there's probably lots of rugby left in you, but you know, it's maybe still an option on retirement. You could always go back.
No, Rob Kearney went back playing, I saw.
He did, yeah.
Never heard of him. Don't rate his left peg like a rate yours, mate. We have a question in from social. It's from at Greg O'Shea. And it says, apart from me, who's been the most influential person in your rugby career, if you could put it down to one person? That can be families, coach, player.
I won't put it to one person. The parents have been, I have to say, incredibly supportive. Go to all our games, go to all the away games, drove us everywhere when we were younger, from hurling training up to rugby training on a Saturday morning. I can't imagine their weekends are too enjoyable, but they've been a big part.
That's what age are you now?
28.
It that's like a mid-20s realization. It's like,
think about it at the time.
Your parents exist.
That their sole existence was not to make sure you played rugby.
Yeah.
But it only hits you in like mid-20s. Have you got it yet?
Just had it there, I think.
Just is gone, oh my goodness.
He was driving me around to go, but actually, fairness, my father. But no, what about players? Most influential player you've ever played with? Tyler Blaindell came to my head for you because you were so close to him.
Yeah, I played with Tyler a lot. He had a great rugby brain, you know, a lot of the Kiwi lads that come over do. So, yeah, I learned a lot from him. But I'd probably say Earlsey, I'm very close to him. You know, a lot of you know he's quiet, but, get on well with him. He's been incredibly successful with Ireland and Munster over the years, and you know, I've definitely learned a lot from him, for sure.
Yeah, he's a good one.
He got a big shout out last week, didn't he?
He did. We won't do it again.
Let's go back through it again.
He deserves it.
No, we love Ersey. All right, Scans, thanks very much for that. We'll be moved back into the rugby. Talk about Connacht, who didn't have a great second half, so they were down.
Oh my, Connacht.
I know, we love Connacht, but they lost 41-21 to Sharks, and they were 21-10 up at halftime, I believe. So it was a poor second half. You've been down in South Africa already. Is it just a different beast, like the conditions down there?
Yeah, we played in Pretoria and Johannesburg, and it was quite hot, you know, high 20s, low 30s, and at altitude as well, which we're obviously not used to. So it's, I did find the last kind of like 20 minutes of those games, you could see boys were blowing, and, you know, that's where the South African teams have that advantage, I suppose. It is quite tough over there, just playing conditions, and, you know, we had two close losses over there. But you can definitely see it. They're winning a lot at home now the last couple of weeks, and that's why they're up the top of the table, and they're going well at home.
Yeah, exactly. The two South African teams in third and fourth, but Connacht were trying to become the first team to win both games out in South Africa this season, which is mad, isn't it? Yeah, I thought a couple more teams. Ulster got a win down there, did they?
Ulster ended up losing both of them.
Yeah, they lost both. Remember they were...
Lost both, yeah.
Munster, Ulster and Leinster all lost both games.
Ulster shouldn't have lost, because remember they had the try disallowed.
Yeah,
which they
there you go,
have.
That was the one, yeah.
Let's talk about that again.
They got an apology.
Well, that's brilliant. Yeah. When you're away to Leinster in the quarterfinal, when you're 50 points down at the RDS after 12 minutes, at least you've got your apology.
It was infuriating.
Yeah, so it's just obviously a different beast down there in South Africa this season.
What's the physicality like? Because that's, I think, one thing I noticed from the game at Connacht. Like, yeah, they capitulated and they, you know, shipped 30 points, which you shouldn't do, but they were bullied. It was kind of pick and go tries and just overpowered. Like,
yeah, you know, when we played the Bulls, they did a huge pack as well, and it was an incredibly physical game, and you know, the South African sides tend to be quite big and use that to their advantage, obviously. You know, a lot of them
tend to be quite big, is a nice way to put it. Like,
anyone who's seen RJ Snyman walk around, that would be how we describe
these guys. Are vending machines, like,
dark very quick.
Sorry, it's kind of gone.
No, very physical, like, for sure. It's you know, they use their set piece quite well. Their maul, you know, they scored a few maul tries last night, and they do tend to be the more physical games of the year, definitely.
Yeah, I think Connacht struggled a little bit.
They did.
It wasn't like Connacht though to be like, I think of Connacht and like it was up the guts, wasn't it? You just sort of say, I always think with Connacht, and maybe again this is the evolution of them from the, you know, the ugly wee brother who's actually nowhere near as good as the other provinces, into a team that have won silverware more recently than Ulster and Munster. But the one thing I always thought with Connacht was like, if you're going to beat them, like, you're not going to beat them up. Do you know what I mean? You're not just going to pick and go through the middle of them.
No, when Leinster played in Sports Ground a couple of weeks ago, like, Connacht were dogged. They slowed the game down. They attacked the breakdown, and only eventually did Leinster pull away. And I think it's kind of the inconsistency of Connacht, isn't it, really? They're struggling to find their identity, and it probably shows as well the depth of their squad, so they can't nearly pick the team to manage different oppositions. And I think, obviously, with the likes of Peter Dooley, Hawkshaw Cunham and Adam Byrne, hopefully it'll give them depth. They won't lose as many players then when it goes to Ireland, because that was a big, obviously, turning point for them. Missing Hansen and Bundy when they come back off Ireland duty. So I think the depth might help them, and then they can maybe adapt their playing style.
Their defence has been poor. Like, they ship... Like, I think they're averaging, you know, 30-something points conceded a game. Yeah. And it actually, I think a lot of it's discipline. They give away a lot of penalties. They've had a lot of cards. So for them, yeah, I love Connacht as well. I just would like they're flattered to deceive this year. So it'll be interesting to see. They need to get a line in the sand, come back stronger next year. But not the worst trip to South Africa. In the end of the day, there's a lot of teams that are going to ship, going to lose by 20 points.
And they got a win down there as well, which other teams weren't able to do. Yeah. So that's impressive. And you just can't be shipping 4 second half tries, like, you know, down there. But so they sit in 12th now in the standings. Sharks have guaranteed themselves a final place in the top eight with that bonus point win. And a shout out to Caelan Blaye with 150 caps.
And he got a lovely try.
He got a great try.
He got a lovely try.
Yeah. He did. It was sneaky.
With the front row.
It was sneaky, but he gave it, like, he was one-on-one and he kind of half stumbled as if, so we did the, play it to him early and then get the ball back, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he had a run on, it would have been Finlay Baim, cornrows everywhere underneath the posts.
Yeah.
So he did the sneaky one, he offload early and then get it back.
Yeah.
So very sneaky, but deserved it. It was 150, it let him well.
It was class. And should we talk about your beloved Ulster?
Oh, what a dreadful game of rugby. It was,
facts.
But tell me this. How many rugby games a weekend would you watch? So you guys played on Friday, which is great for the social calendar. but then like you have the whole weekend and like Greg comes in here and is like, oh yeah, I watched that. It is nonsense. Like YouTube. How many games? Like
I might watch two maybe if we had a Friday game.
But there's a lot of rugby on, isn't there?
Yeah.
How many games do you watch a weekend?
This weekend I probably watch two. I watched the England, France and the Ireland one.
It's tough, and then in here.
I watched a bit of the Munster because I was over my parents and my dad had it on, so I watched the Munster.
What's your point anyway, Darren?
The point was, I can't remember. No, the point was, Ulster's just, there was a lot of rugby on this weekend, and by the time I got to that, and I watched the game, yeah, but I actually found it was on my phone for a lot of it because it was so boring, but a great result.
So boring.
It was a dreadful match.
I'm not sure
you got the win, though, away in Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah, but listen, it was like the weather came in, and like, I'm just telling you this because obviously you didn't see it. It wasn't a lot of tries, but Edinburgh had like three, when I say try scoring opportunities, I mean like completely butchered in the first 10 minutes. And they butchered all three of them. And then Ulster from there. Do you want to remind me of Munster at the Kingspan the week before? They just didn't really play well. They just sort of smothered the other team and just did enough. But it's a great result. They're the first team to win there this season. And it was a huge win because Ulster were... I don't think there's concerns about getting in the top eight. But home advantage is big. Mm-hmm. And... we spoke about it with Leinster finishing top. That's all they needed to do. Because say you finish, you get in the top eight, you're away from home. Mm. So even if you finish like third or fourth, you win your quarterfinal, but then you're away from home in the semi. Do you know what I mean? You want to get as far as possible with home advantage. So Ulster, I think...
Do you think the wheels are coming off the wagon towards the end of the season for Ulster?
I said last week, it was like halftime in the Toulouse game. It was like, we're on for the double. Yeah. And 6 days later, it was like, oh my goodness, yeah, we're away.
Sorry. I think it's all right. A win away to Edinburgh. Like,
that's a good result. That's a real good result.
Edinburgh were disciplined. Like Doak put a nice couple of penalties over. They scored tries and they needed it. Like it wasn't. You don't always have to win pretty.
No, it's a sign of a good team. They won ugly. They got the 4 points. And, you know, now they'll just be trying to finish in that top four. Because the other thing is, with those South African teams lurking about...
Stay away from them.
Yeah. Well, and if you're going to play them at home.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? You just said it. Connacht, the mighty Connacht. And is it Edinburgh? Only two teams to win down there. So nobody wants to be, you know, say... something, say, you know, fixture results went against Munster and you ended up with South African teams in 2, 3 and 4, like you're not really going to want to be in 8, 7 or 6, do you know what I mean?
No.
Yeah. They had some good performances though, individually. Nick Timney made 28 tackles and missed 0, which is an incredible stat. That's up there with Hamish Watson's stats. And then Alan O'Connor, man, he's just week in, week out playing well. He's not ever going to get up to the Irish squad. What's going on up there with him?
Do you know what? He is like a cult legend up in Ulster. Like all the players absolutely love him. Do you know what? He's just one of those guys who I think like rugby, so much about it. It's not everything, but so much, particularly in the front five, is about being absolutely massive. And for an international front five player, like he's just not
big enough.
He's just not a vending machine. Do you know what I mean? He's a big guy. Like if he walked in here, you know, he's a big lad. But the international second rows are not big lads. They're freaking huge.
Yeah.
But like,
and they can play back row nowadays. Really.
He's
you're kind of playing with your back five being nearly all back row forwards.
Yeah. Dynamic.
He's so well respected within the group. Like he's captained Ulster a number of times. He's absolutely hard as nails. Like seriously hard. And he's very, very popular. So he's a guy who I was surprised he was actually on the bench, although Treadwell's been doing well. But anyway.
But he got a yellow and so did Timoney as well. Didn't put a little bit of pressure on his. And
yeah, there was a bit of...
cynical play now, to be honest. Yeah, I thought it was a bit harsh. But because actually, Marnie Packer, I don't know if any of you have seen the women's game, like England did it so well. She was just on the cusp of waiting. Like if the referee was hot on it, they wouldn't. But herself and Poppy Cleal are so cynical around the breakdown when France were about 5 metres. I was like, I hate you because you're getting away with it, but I have to admire you at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just that fine line depending on referees.
Some rugby players are just really, really good at cheating.
Oh, well, she is one of them. And I was like, you teach me your dark arts.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying, in my opinion. Absolutely. Live life on the edge. Remember Richard McCaw, best player ever? He was cheating all the time. Just kept getting away with it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, not that Alan O'Connor is a cheater.
No, we're not calling anyone cheaters here. No. We're saying they just care. All right, we're moving on with some other roundup results of the URC. So Bulls won at home 29-17 to Glasgow. Who else do we have? We had Lions beat Benetton 37-29. Zebre got their first win in 27 games to stop. That's a crazy losing streak.
Serious?
They won 23-18 at home to Dragons.
Is that like, lads, you know, like,
I'm going to give them a clap right now because Italian rugby take a bow.
I remember at Zebras, still, like, when you go there, they have like a I'm going to call it a wall of shame. They basically have a wall, which is every game they've won. Now at this stage, obviously not a lad like me, because when the Times teams first joined, did you play when it was Aroni?
So no.
There was the team in Parma were called Aroni, it was near Parma. And then Zebra were born brand new, and they had a new stadium, and obviously they were brand new. So they hadn't won a lot of games, do you know?
Yeah.
So they had a wall. I think it was on the tunnel. Have you seen that?
Yeah, there's quite a few pictures.
The Ulster
there,
are on it. Yeah, I'm on it. I love a wall of fame.
So you just want to drop in the wall of fame to say your mush is on.
Yeah, the mush isn't on it. It was before the midlife crisis. But anyway, they haven't won a lot of rugby. It's on the wall in evidence.
No. You're in the trenches, guys. What's it like going down to Zebra? How do you see that? Is just an easy win and get out of there, or are they still competitive?
No, they're competitive, yeah. They're incredibly physical, so like if you give them an in at the start of the game, they'll stick with you. So you kind of have to be prepared for that as well. Like, we've gone over there a few times and it's got away with 4 points just, so like it is a tough place to go and win as well at the same time, even though you see some results and you're like, oh
yeah,
this will be handy, but it's definitely not handy.
Are Munster on the wall?
Might have been the Aroni days, maybe.
I don't think Munster last down there. I don't know. They came close one time losing.
Yeah, I don't think I've... Not since I've been there.
You haven't made it.
You're not on the wall again.
It won't be advertised now.
I remember them being like very disrupting, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, you go down there and they just throw out the kamikaze stuff and try and make it an absolute mess. And then somehow beat you.
Well, they're just one of them teams, I'd say. You think it's easy, you know, it's just going to be a formality, and they just frustrate you. And they force you into, like, between your mindset and just them being so dogged, you're just forced into these crazy errors.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised. 27 games.
That's mad, man.
That's a lot of
your rubbers. Conduct a couple of weeks ago, only scraped by them, did they not?
Just about.
Like, they've been very close.
Still, but 27 no games. That's nearly a full season, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Times must have been good. Yeah. Morale high.
They cracked a few bottles of vino last night, I'd say. Another result, Ospreys scored 54 points to beat Scarlets 36 with their 36 points. And George North made his return. That lad is still playing rugby. Fair play to him.
Sure, he got captain. He was about 15.
Yeah, well, true. Yeah, he's probably not even that old. Like, he's been playing for so long.
He's actually only about 29.
He's not younger than me.
I'm only joking. I don't think he's that old.
No, maybe 32.
I have no idea. But good to see him back playing. And another person I actually saw back playing was Frog Splash Chris Ashton. Man, that guy's been playing for so long.
Now he is about 54.
He got a hat trick as well.
Yeah.
He's still playing. Three?
Yeah. He's still an absolute beast, man. I couldn't believe you said, but I put him in there. This is really bad. Actually, if he listens, I feel bad saying
apparently
this.
Apparently, he is a really big listener.
Is he? Yeah.
He loves the URC. I
put him in the same kind of category as like Mark Cueto, that kind of age group. That could be ages in gap, is it?
I'd say Mark Cueto is like mid-40s.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, Chris.
Oh, God,
Ashton.
I don't think Chris, yeah.
I take 36.
If there's any complaints that anyone wants to put in about Greg with being ageist.
I know, I am being ageist.
It's a lot of tries. It was 93 tries.
92 tries he has.
That's a lot.
In the Prem.
In the Premiership.
Without England, yeah.
Oh, he's an incredible player. I'm not taking that away from him. I just haven't seen him around in a while.
He's
still at the top of the game. And then the big fixture that we really wanted to get onto is Ireland v Scotland women's game. Great win. Lindsay, take it away.
Thankfully, we avoided the wooden spoon. We finished fourth and it was an unbelievable win. Like, my nerves are not settled since last night because the girls left it to the 83rd minute to score, but Enya Breen stepped up, scored the try, and then nerves of steel to put over the conversion. But Ireland did what they needed. They kept the ball, the bench came off, made an impact. We knew it'd be close with Scotland. You know, Scotland hadn't won a game. They were a dangerous animal. But yeah, the girls just went through their phases and took their moments. And Scottish defence was unbelievable. But yeah, thankfully we just got over the line. It was
and
brilliant.
Did Ireland go into that game as favourites or expected to be Scotland, or is that a big win?
I think it's a big win considering the nature of the tournament for us. It was, you know, a brand new coaching squad. We had a lot of retirees, including myself. Everyone was like, "Get, please leave." And I think it's just a new era. Like, we had started our, you know, new cycle early, whereas everyone else gone to the World Cup. So, yes, I think for us to finish bottom, it would have been the worst finish since 2004.
No way. Yeah,
that's the last time Ireland got the wooden spoon and finished.
Wow.
Rock bottom. So for Scotland, you know, considering they're going to a World Cup, they're in an tough, I think they're in with New Zealand, Australia, and Japan, if I'm not mistaken, that pool. So it's a tough L pool.
And are Scotland like Ireland with no professionals, or are they semi-pro?
They're kind of supported is the term. But
it's a great word. It's a great word, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of cloak and dagger. What are they? Yeah. They actually 12 out of their 15 starting last night playing the Tyrrells Premiership, so they played a very high level. I'd say they're paid by a lot of those clubs, if not match fees. I'd say that on some level they're paid. So now it's what's important for us now is this tournament was always just going to unveil what the gap is between us and the likes of France and England, and how we're going to use now the implementation plan and the changes going forward to kind of facilitate our grassroots, our national team, and kind of merge it all together to make a successful program.
The thing that kind of like, say, worries me, this is actually a question.
Yeah, of course.
Is the gap at the minute is probably getting bigger.
It's huge. 6-9-0 we lost.
But it's not being closed. Because I'm looking at it and going, in Ireland, there's a few things going on, as we know. And again, I never played in the women's game, so I don't know what it's like right in that. But there seems to be, there's paying people to play, which is important, but there's also like the pathway. We spoke about it slightly before. So paying people to play, that helps you week to week because you don't have to work and you can train for the game, but doesn't fully solve the problem in that you cannot take somebody from basketball, aged 18, pay them and then expect them to be able to scrum against England.
Yeah, like I came to rugby at 35, and to even go into the scrum and realise how technical it was. Like my first season, like my debut was like, what the hell am I doing? Like I was, well, I came in as flanker for the world class Claire Malloy. I was asking Mary Healy, what am I doing at the time? Thankfully, I wasn't in the scrum. Then I started 2016 Six Nations, and I'd say they were like, "What? Who the hell are they at her? Like, they're at her getting this one from a circus or something. Like, what is she doing here?" Like, so we're all kind of, there's very few. Now, Enya's a different kettle of fish. She would have played with Carrick Lyons, Gibb and Bantry, if I'm not mistaken. So she's come from an underage. She would have played with the boys. So she's a lot more depth to her game. And you can see that in her. Like, her tackle tech, her foundations are there. And she's an unbelievable person on top of being an exceptional rugby player. So any of them that we've seen come, Niamh Jones has been playing since underage Ulster. Would have been, I think she's with Cook. Was she with Cook, I think. So you can see the difference in her. She's been absolutely standout. Performer for Ireland, so we can see the difference. But I think the framework is hugely different. Like, we don't have skills, we don't have women or girls in rugby tots, so we've no pathway to bring us up. We've no kind of semi-professional skill system where you have S&C
but is that not the scary thing? Because you can actually can find money. They say they can, but they can find money. They could, if you could issue 20 professional contracts tomorrow, like these contracts are not. But that,
it's not going to sort it for us, though, is it?
That's the question. How do you? But it takes 10 or 15 years to change culture and habits. Mm-hmm. And as you say, like, you see it in, I think I was commentating on the 20s, and you notice it in particular, the players that went to school in those big Dublin schools, age 18, they are like professionals already.
But sure, so say, like, I won't name any schools because it's unfair, but I know some schools will be like, well, how many contracts are we going to get from Leinster? Will, you know, our senior skills cup, like, they'd obviously have a target, you know, whereas we don't have rugby. And the other thing for the female side of things is a lot of parents don't want their daughters playing a nutritional sport, but it's, we need them in early, because when your tackle tech is good and, you know, it's solidified and the foundations are there, most of them are, we don't have to think, so it's less injuries. Do you know what I mean? So we need to train our girls early. We need to get, you know, all players exposed regardless of their gender. And it's not about money. It's like the RFU merged with the RFWU back in 2014, as far as I know. you had to apply, all the clubs in the Tyrrell Premiership had to apply with a plan and how they were going to facilitate the players and buy in. So they actually had to take it seriously and have this master plan of how their S&C, their high performance, who their coaches are going to be. So you had to make an application and you had to be approved.
But where does Ireland even start?
But see, we were talking, I know during the week there was an article from, a women's URC, but I don't think we have the pool of players to even do that. We'd nearly have to have our Irish team as a club team and be playing then in a competition. But again, that doesn't facilitate the development of our players when in our own domestic league.
Yeah.
So we kind of need to start looking like how the Premiership is working, but how is it going to work for Ireland? And right now we don't have the player pool. We probably don't have the money. They're not running under a high performance network.
I think URC is too big of a jump. I think
huge.
Yeah, it's too big of a jump. First clubs, even making the women's Munster Connacht, all the provinces, get them playing each other, going over to play the Prem teams back.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
Just getting over and just having games all the time.
Well, was not an inter-provincial recently, excuse my ignorance, where some of or all of the international players weren't available?
Yeah, we weren't released. No, because we were getting ready for the World Cup qualifiers.
I'm like looking at these like huge independent reports that probably cost a lot of money. And I'm going, well, like, I could tell you that if you're not playing like a really high standard of rugby regularly, you're not going to be able to go and beat England. Like, it doesn't take a report.
Yeah.
It seems a very strange thing for everyone to sit down and go, here's a cracking idea, right? Have an interprovincial, but make sure the best players aren't playing.
But sure, and that's what I mean. Like, it's only mad. 3 to 5 games. It's not even a season.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. If you take, say, England, right, they had a month pre-season where they went into Bisham Abbey or St. George's. They don't have a central. So they go in Monday to Friday. They play under high pressurised, they call it PDP. So it's these, position-specific, high intensity. So it's full scrums, full lineouts under time constraints. So you're all pressurised situations. So it's all regimented as to what they'll have in a game scenario. And then when that's done, they're released back to their clubs. They might go in front of their Ireland internationals Monday to Wednesday, back with their club for captain's run Thursday, day off Friday, play with their club Saturday, day off Sunday, back with England. Yeah. So that's the professional setup, but everything goes back to the club. All their S&C is under there. Like, it's just, it does work for them. I'm not saying it's going to work for Ireland, but contracts and a knee-jerk reaction now and throwing money. No one's saying about money necessarily, but like, losing to England 69-0, a lot of the girls went back to work Monday. You're morally broken, physically broken.
They need to put more money in this. Start paying the girls, make them at least semi-pro.
Well, look at the quickly with Wales. Like, even their fitness, their physique has changed.
Yeah, but my thing is, like, these girls are after going away, getting a Six Nations win. Unreal. Okay, class. And then they just go back to their jobs on a Monday. Like, it's like, need to keep these girls playing rugby, stay on top of it, keep that buzz going. But one thing I want to ask you about, because we could talk about just all day, is the sevens players, right?
Yep.
I'm a sevens player, so I have a lot big passion for it. And they played a lot of the first Six Nations games.
Yep.
Then they just took out like 5 or 6 starters from the Six Nations team, sent them over to Langford, and they're playing in Langford now in Canada, playing really well. They're into the Cup quarterfinal against USA today, actually, in a couple of hours. But that's mad. Just take away half the team, go play sevens, and then bring in a group of other girls. What's that about, like?
I don't know, and like, not to undermine Langford, but I don't think there was anything like, well, you know, obviously we want to play sevens rugby and there's a World Cup year and it's hugely important. So like, this is a big year for the sevens programme. So that's totally understandable.
They're just abusing the same players.
Absolutely. Like England have their sevens and they have their 15s. And especially this year, they were like, you know, if you're contracted 15s, same with Emily Scarrett, she would have been a sevens and then she wanted to concentrate in 15s. I mean, she got her 100 cap last week.
Yeah.
You know, I can't see them being beaten for the World Cup. So she's now a contracted 15s player, but they don't cross over. English sevens are sevens and English 15s are 15s. The same with the Black Ferns. There's very few. They might integrate in.
I was just in the sevens, 15s completely separate. You don't have lads jumping back and across.
Because they're different sports.
Different sports, man. Absolutely. The top level, they're completely different sports. Scans, you never played sevens because you broke into senior squad early. But like, what do you make of it all? Do you think the women should be professional or do you have an opinion on it?
Yeah, like, it's something needs to change for sure. As you said, we could chat about it all day, but yeah, it's like you said, you can't be crossing over to different sports. Like, for when you started with the sevens, it was a pathway for 15s, and then you know all of a sudden you might, all right, you're back in with the club now and then you're concentrating on 15s,
but you're like,
some lads stay with the sevens and enjoy playing sevens, but yeah, I don't think you can have them crossing over and back. Like,
yeah, but as a current like senior men's player in Ireland, getting paid, you all have decent wages. Like, you'd be happy for the women to get the same pay and just be playing away as much as you are.
100%. Yeah.
Do you think it's something like, because I know the Leinster setup, and Leinster were very good to us in Interpros, but they only have us for a certain amount. But if we could use the gym, even the 20s gym, which is, I think it's the Ken Owens, is it down in Energia? Because even our exposure to S&C and, you know, which is injury prevention, plus it takes a minimum of 3 years probably for the girls to get up to speed with just their fundamentals and actually lifting right and then reaping the rewards of that. Like, it's, people don't actually have a concept of how long it takes. Like, even if we do this right, we're probably not going to reap the rewards realistically for 2 to 3 years. And how far will England and France be ahead then?
And that's the point, that, and that's what's so interesting about the men's game, not to go back to it, is a lot of these kids in Dublin in particular, not to be areaist in
that's
Ireland,
right.
they are starting that journey at 13. Mm-hmm. Therefore, do you know,
well, Rory just said he picked his at 17, you know, to pick your sport that you wanted. Like, yeah, you're over 10 years now in a professional setup. Like,
yeah. I think the thing that just worries me, I think we take for granted how big a job it has been to get the men's game to where it is. Like, professionalism, it's quite a new concept. You're basically saying kissing goodbye to the AL. The provinces are old, but you're buying into it. And the professional game in Ireland, with the men's game, has been an enormous success. Yeah. Like, phenomenal. If you look around the world, New Zealand is probably the only other country that can say professional rugby has been that successful. You have clubs, 4 teams, they're not privately owned. They're producing an absurd amount of players. But it's a huge journey to get to the stage now whereby Leinster have professionals coming at 18. And listen, I talk about Leinster, but Connacht, Munster and Ulster aren't that far behind.
No.
But it's just, that's what worries me about it. On a positive note, I think the sponsorship for the Six Nations is
TikTok is
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Not only the money, because it does make the world go round, yeah, and there is chicken and egg, but to give that exposure to the game at that target, I mean, it's the best. Now, the extra content, and who are the people that are using TikTok except you, Greg? Like, young teenage, the exact people you want playing rugby. I was commentating on the big game at the weekend, Wales against Italy in the Women's Six Nations.
You got a cracker.
But even looking on TV, it looked
unbelievable.
Yeah, it looked great. The branding was on the pitch, the anthems and the fireworks, teams coming out, like the crowd. It just looked, in particular, the couple of the England games, those crowds.
I was at Welford last
really,
week.
Really good for the game.
Yeah, the England game was unbelievable.
Even as the way the TV deals are done now, I still think they've work to do in the scheduling because, albeit it's good to step out of the men's shadow, I look at the game on Saturday night and I'm like, it was kicked off at the same time as the Ulster game. In a different location, but how many people in Belfast? Yeah. I didn't see the women's game last night because I was watching Ulster.
Of course.
So it's just something to keep an eye on. But that's kind of the positive note that I think we should kind of... Yeah. I'm hosting now, Greg.
No, 100%.
That's kind of... I feel like we should finish on a positive that it's not a wee slap, patronising slap on the bum, but it is really good.
We crashed the record in RDS at the first round. It was over 6,100. I think it was over 5,000 in Musgrave. And then I think we had sold 7,000 last night. Not sure it was 7,000 there considering the weather and obviously the Ulster match. But it was just records all around. Like, and actually, I think Scrum Queens did a kind of synopsis of the overall and it beat a lot of the Premiership viewing with some of the overall women's games. So it's huge. I think the window's huge. It's going to stick to that next year. That's being confirmed. We've the new Global 15s calendar, which will be huge and hopefully give another more exposure in the autumn side of things. So you've now 2 pinnacle windows where like women's rugby can just be standalone and be viewed and bought into. And like you said, TikTok are huge. How much exposure can could you ask for? So
yeah, it's massive.
Look, it's been a hugely positive all around and hopefully things will only go upwards.
Definitely, yeah, it's going in the right direction. So let's move on to finish up with some rugby news. England beat France and secured the Grand Slam and 4 successive crown in Women's Six Nations. Those two teams are just dominating Six Nations.
Actually, England just missed out on a perfect Grand Slam if they had got a bonus point yesterday. And they knocked a record they set up in 2019 by scoring 282 points, I think, which was 20 more. They only had to beat it by 20 more, which they did yesterday. So yeah, they knocked that out. Like, they're just knocking.
Incredible stuff. We also need to give a shout out to someone I'm sure you played loads with. Anna Caplice, retired from Irish Women's Rugby.
Can I just take a moment because I just really want to say thank you to Anna. I think she's had a fantastic career. She's a fantastic person. And I know that decision didn't come easy. She's a fellow Cork woman who lives, breathes, eats Cork, Munster rugby, Ireland rugby. And I just want to congratulate her on an amazing career. So thanks for the shout out. She'll appreciate that. But yeah, Anna, we love you. Congratulations and enjoy your retirement.
Yeah. Anna's great. Actually, funny enough, I coached Crescent College Junior Cup team with Anna Caplice. She was the head coach. I was the backs coach.
Oh, look, yeah. She-
anymore. She's a great coach as well, so not sure if she's going to go into that, but no, she's a great woman, a great rugby player. And that's about it, guys. So, Rory Scannell, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You survived.
Yeah. Well done.
You survived.
Darren, great to have you on as well, man.
It's good. The new format worked really, really well. Jason had a good few months at it, but hopefully he enjoys his holiday because it's going to be a bloody long one.
We'll all be back with a tash next week.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. All right, and of course, a massive thank you to our partners, Bank of Ireland, proud supporters of the four Irish provinces, and we'll catch you next week, guys. Thanks very much.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.